step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, guys. Welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs podcast. Thanks for stopping by and thank you for listening. Today is the full episode of Haunted Mirror with True Bloody Mary to reveal mysterious world. A haunted mirror that reveals an old plantation is full of cursed objects, and it's taken a young woman, and she has to be found. So, let's get started. Hi, and welcome to the Dark Web Vlogs, where I'm sharing the experiences I've had working with clients on some of the most outrageous deals being run over the dark web. Now, the last time I posted to you guys, I just got back from another job that took me through Alaska, and I can tell you about that, but it's what happened when I got home and where I've been that turned out crazy. I got called to a job that was more of an emergency than a lot of jobs that I do are. You know, they're all urgent in their own way, but this man who was reaching out to me was in a panic, and I could see why. His daughter, his only daughter, had been taken. While he was working on renovating a very old estate where they were also temporarily living for the summer, the young girl found something in the old gardens, a very old mirror. And after visiting it too many times, that young girl vanished into whatever world was beyond it. And he needs someone with the tools, experience, and that can believe that this can happen, to go in and get her. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. I've worked a lot of jobs, and today is my account of how we always have to consider that legends and even fairy tales might have an actual beginning somewhere in a time long, long ago. Take a listen and enjoy. Let me recap just a bit what I gave you in the preview on this, in case you missed it. I finally get back from Alaska last week, and I'm welcomed by one requester who's already put 5 requests in. This does not usually happen, right? So it gets my attention. I read them all, and what's happened is that his daughter has been taken from him. You know, he's clear. She didn't have a fight with a boyfriend. She'd never run away. His ex didn't take her. It's nothing like that. He says it's way bigger than any of that. In the request he's shared with me, he tells me that they're living in a very large and very old, built in 1856, home down south in Alabama. He's working there at the moment and has gotten to know a few things about the house he's staying in and the land it's on. And one pretty unsettling thing is that he's convinced the place is haunted somehow. There are a lot of old objects still on the property as well, including old mirrors. The attic has more than one. Those are all covered. The house is still in the family who he works for, and there are a lot of old items still stored up there in that way. Most older items are inside the house, but they have a lot of land. It used to be a cotton plantation. There are fields, of course, but then down from the house a ways is where the owners, who were an elite bunch, used to go for shade and to socialize while the farmers did the work. According to this requester, who I'm referring to as Mason, he's seen the pictures of the place back in the day, and he tells me that these gardens, like all of this place, used to be beautiful. But of course, now this area is old and hasn't been taken care of quite some time. It was in these gardens that his daughter, who I'm calling Isabella, and she had a nickname, and I'll call her Bella, found it. She found this mirror, and he was warned to stay away from any mirrors, but his daughter was drawn to this one for some reason. Wasn't covered. One too many visits, being mesmerized by this thing, and she was gone. He believes this is real, and through his panic, I can just feel that this appears could be true. Although something that we like to joke about as kids with our friends, even as adults, they've made movies about mirrors. Look at Candyman, Oculus. They're movies that made us jump. In real life, though, mirrors can hold a big history of what they've seen, and they're a place for spirits and energy to take refuge and return. The last reason Mason is so desperately trying to find me is because from what the handyman, who's in a long line of handymen on the property and knows quite a bit, he told Mason that he only has 4 days to get his daughter out or she could be lost forever inside wherever she is inside this mirror. Now, I'll admit, I was pretty excited to be home when I got back from Alaska, and I was just dropping off my things at the warehouse when all of this was flooding in. You know, after the incident, Mason ran up to the house from those gardens and started putting these requests in. So it's all happening at the same time. Like I said, there were 5 so far. With the rest of my team there, we're just going nuts watching all this happen. But I did accept, of course, and we turned around and left again immediately. I took Frankie, Jagger, and Scarlet with me. We meet Mason, and he goes over everything again, and then goes around and shows us all the old mirrors that he can find in the house, shows us a little bit of the house. But we go up to the attic, and we check out the mirrors there, and then there's the one out in the garden. Of all the mirrors we find 3 that match. And Scarlet explains that she's seen this before. The one outside and the 2 in the attic. We bring in the one from outside and up to the attic with the others, and we line them up against one wall, with the largest being in the middle, and that would be the one from the garden. She explains to us that what we have here is a gateway triad. The largest one is the only one that can work alone, but put together, they all will work and work together, and they're more powerful. In her historical studies, she explained that she's learned this was an ancient way for people to try to escape death or later death and persecution by escaping into a mirror. But then over time, this whole idea turned into many theories, one being that with these mirrors, maybe you could reach those that had already jumped or had passed, or that if you were to look into it too closely, you could actually be affected and find yourself under the spell of someone or something on the inside, and then possibly taken to the inside yourself. You don't often hear of people or souls jumping out of a mirror, if you think about it. It's really usually people that go in or get sucked in unwillingly. They're taken. That's exactly what happened to Bella. Scarlett's explaining all of this, and that's when the handyman shows up. I've wanted to talk to that guy since we got there, so I'm excited that he's there, and I'm calling him Frank. When he gets to the attic, he's out of breath, and he just looks at all of us, and, you know, he's astonished that we're all up there and we have these mirrors out. He turns to Mason, you know, asking him what the heck he thinks he's trying to do. You know, he knew Mason was looking for help to go in after Bella, but he thought it would be to just use the one in the garden. He didn't understand it all the way Scarlet did, or we didn't know he did or think he did. In the case of a triad, we will want the power of all 3 if we all want to be able to go in and get her and get ourselves out. I can see that he's scared, so I try to calm Frank down and I pull up a chair for him and I explain that, you know, who we are and what we do and that he can trust us. It seems to do some good. We need to get him talking. So I ask him to tell us more about what he knows. We only know what we've gotten from Mason so far. Well, Frank shifts in his seat. He's purposely avoiding looking at the mirrored, you know, wall that we've now created of all bad things, and I can't blame him. But right now, we need to know what he knows, because he's known the family. He's heard stories firsthand. He's our best resource. After a little bit of easing him into the situation, he does start talking, and we all settle in that dark attic for a little bit of story time. Frank tells us that according to family legend he knows, the big mirror was brought outside for that very reason of the power of the three, to break them up. Too many things were happening in the house and to the family members and their guests because of them. They would have rather destroyed the mirrors, but they didn't want to break them for fear of what they would do. So that was their temporary solution that stuck. They put it out in the garden and made it known to the entire family that that area was now off limits. It was a place they could keep their eye on without ever having to go there, and no one else should stumble on it. Even though they liked that garden, they thought it was the safest and best place. A good plan. But these days, not many people knew about any of that.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
That part. All the other old family mirrors were carried up into the attic and covered as well, because they didn't want to find out anything about them or start anything. They didn't want these mirrors to ever be used again, and they didn't want them to get out either. Frank then gets up and walks across the room, away from the mirrors, where a lot of stuff in storage was. It's all covered with sheets, and he pulls away a few of those sheets. You know, we see an old mannequin torso, dolls, paintings. There was a lot over there, but he found what he was looking for, which was an old box. He had to dig it out a bit, but he got it. He goes back over to his chair and sits down, opens it up and digs through that, papers and things, but then he finds it. It's this key ring with just one key on it. He pulls it out, sets the box down, and then gets up and tells us that we all need to get to work, that we have to move all of the stuff that's against that wall if we want to get in. Well, it's the wall closest to the inside of the house. We know old houses. He's talking about the secret room. Well, yeah, we want to get in, so we all dive in, and since it's all of us, we actually get everything moved pretty fast. There's some interesting things in there, but right now we're just trying to get it out of the way. Once it's all moved, Frank does his thing, and the door's a little hard to open. It's sticky, but we get it open. We get inside, and wow. They've got this crazy tribute room. There are small windows at the top. You can see the air is dusty, but there are these little pictures lining the walls. Well, some aren't so little, but this is like a family tree or family album. Frank tells us that he hasn't been in that room since he was a very young man, that Mr. Hawthorne, that's the name of the plantation family, that name goes way back, but it was the Mr. Hawthorne of that time. Anyway, Frank says that Mr. Hawthorne took him in there as a young man and wanted him to understand what the land and place meant to them. Frank came from a long line of handymen and worked with the family since the beginning, and this was tradition. In order to take care of the place, Mr. Hawthorne wanted him to see for himself what it all was he was caring for and helping to protect. He showed him the larger picture. It was in a nice frame of a man who was in the middle of the far wall. And he said that was the Mr. Hawthorne, the one that started it all in the 1800s. Back in those days, the area was full of plantations like this one. And so his greatest granddaddy that he knew of wanted to make sure that theirs stood out. He said he'd spare no expense, and he did not. That was the story. To see all those photos, there was nothing like it. We've all seen the family photo wall that follows the stairway and the fireplace mantle full of memories, and the albums, of course. That's how people did it. I've never heard of this, not like this anyway. It was a sitting room, a room to remember those that worked and gone before you. Having someone older than you tell you the stories. And Frank heard some of them. We're all into it. But then Frank points out the ones in the black frames. And I didn't even realize it before, but all the others were in gold and silver, except for those. They were all actually made of iron. Hadn't seen that really before either. I also couldn't help notice that they were all women. Frank said that those were the ones that were taken, from the family at least, the ones recorded in this way. He could name them all. There were Sarah, Rose, Helen, Elsie, and Nora. They became known in the family as the Hawthorne Five. If something strange happened in the house, someone might say, the five are busy today. Or if you wanted to have a gathering at the home and you wanted it to go well, you might look up and say, maybe the five be on our side. It was a common thing, but the Hawthorne Five were also feared. It was a feeling they all shared, that whatever it was had more collecting to do. Now, Frank didn't know what was on the other side, but there were others that were taken. He was sure of that. People outside of the family. He knew there were. But that wasn't talked about much in the family. As twisted as it was, if someone like that was taken, it became a belief that maybe the five would be satisfied, at least for a while, taking what they could get. So maybe they would leave the family members alone for a while. I had to ask, of course, why they were all women, and how do they know it's the five women doing the dirty work? Well, Frank tells us that it was the women who were more vulnerable. The men didn't care too much to even bother with the mirrors. And if they did, you know, because they were dressed up or something like that, they didn't linger. But the women did. There were others who have said they have seen women in the mirrors, or at least one of them. But those people weren't from the plantation. They weren't in the family, and they wouldn't have a chance to really stand at the mirror and look, possibly become a victim. But again, enough became enough, and the large mirror was taken outside and the others were brought to the attic. I walked up to the five iron frames and took a hard look at these women. We all did. We need to remember their faces. You could see that they came from different generations, but none were recent. Frank came up and stood beside me, said the Mr. Hawthorne started the plantation in 1852, built the house in 1856. The man only had enough money to buy the land back when he started, and they lived in a shack basically, but his dream was to build and go big, and he did. He built that house when he was 22 years old, which back then was already getting on in years, remember. At 26, when his house went up, he was becoming a part of that elite status that even back then people admired and wanted to be a part of. But still, his family is what really came first to him. Always said he built it all for those he loved at the time and for those that would come after him. And those mirrors, those were a gift from a man that Hawthorne met at one of their gatherings at the home, which he often had to stay connected with the community, keep good business. He hadn't met the man before, but he liked him. And this man seemed impressed and supportive of all that Mr. Hawthorne was doing. After the event, the next day, he sent those mirrors as a gift to Hawthorne's wife, for her hospitality. But this was no gift. This was a jealous man who passed on a curse. But that wouldn't get figured out for a while. Frank points to the first iron picture and says, that's Sarah. She was the first victim, taken in 1862. Sarah was his wife's sister. A lot of the family lived there back then because they wanted to share their place and be close to everyone. No one saw it but the maid, apparently, and she claimed it was the mirrors, that she had seen it happen. Well, the Hawthornes didn't know what to believe, but they certainly weren't going to believe something as ridiculous as that. But the maid wouldn't stop. She was hysterical, saying the mirrors had to go. But they were a gift for his wife, and they weren't going anywhere. But the maid did leave. That was the end of it, for a while. Then Frank points to the next picture and tells us that's Rose. She was Hawthorne's wife, and she was the next one to go. When she started acting funny, Hawthorne did document in his journals that It did remind him of how Sarah was before she ran off, which is what they told themselves. He tried to keep an eye on Rose to make sure she wasn't getting the urge to do the same. But that fateful day came anyway. That's when he knew. He knew it was the mirrors. He knew Rose loved those mirrors, and he left her standing in front of them one minute, just for a minute. But when he got back, he saw it for himself. Rose let out a cry, and then as if turning into smoke, she was sucked into the large mirror. He ran to her, but all he got was her handkerchief that she'd been holding as it flew through the air after she let go of it and vanished. And at this point is where you get that reaction that I gave you just an example of in the preview. That was basically how it went down for Mason, and for Hawthorne it wasn't much different. He was in shock. He didn't believe in things like that, but there he was, and he had seen it with his own eyes. Well, Hawthorne didn't know what to do. He thought he was crazy. He ran around the house yelling for Rose, hoping to find her, but he didn't. People tried to help calm him, but he couldn't be calmed. When he finally fell to his knees, giving in to what had happened, what he now knew also happened to Sarah, he just wanted help. He started telling the help what he knew happened. He started telling everyone that we'd come by the house or that worked there that the mirrors took Rose and he wanted to help get her back. But like he did with Sarah, they thought he was not being truthful or maybe he was seriously confused. A lot of them had seen Rose unhappy lately and they thought that Rose left him for whatever reason and that maybe Hawthorne was losing his mind over it. But that wasn't the case. Hawthorne eventually just went silent about the whole thing, added her picture to the wall, and passed away soon afterwards. But not before passing down the tradition of the wall and telling the stories about the mirrors. Frankie shares that after Rose, Helen was taken next, then Elsie, then Nora. About every 10 years until the mirrors were finally removed from their place.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And moved. Something they were actually fearful of doing. They didn't know what would happen if they took them from this place. But things went on after that and they never went into that garden. No one did until now, which brings us to today with Mason. We don't know what to expect here. And although we're a little bit spent from travel, we know that we have to keep moving. Frank has given us all he knows. He did say he tried to warn Bella, and Mason says he got the warning too, but there's just no stopping a girl of that age, is what Mason thought. By the time he got there, she was being sucked into this bright light of reflection from the sun under the mirror, and she was gone. When he ran up to the mirror, there was nothing. There was nothing he could do either, and the rest you know, because I went over all of that. But okay, so we know with objects like this, you have to be very careful. It's not like you can actually study the problem or get to know it much before you're all involved. You can't even see it. It just looks like an object. Reminds me of another movie, Insidious. Remember all those objects? That was based on true things, and it didn't work out so well for them either. I bet there were a few surprise realization moments in their lives. Point being, though, this was a very delicate situation. There we were with the mirrors. We had to get in somehow, but there was the challenge, you know, sitting there. Mason would not come with us, by the way. He would actually be a risk for us at this point in the condition that he was in. But we would have to sit there in front of the mirrors, which just had, you know, we had them propped up against the wall. We would have to let ourselves be taken, but we would want to avoid actually getting put under any spells or being put out. We were going willingly, so we would have to resist those powers that would try to work on us. We would have to try to stay clear. We're not vulnerable, but this is still going to have to be all mind over matter here. There are no tricks we can use. We need to be open to what they give us so that they know we're receiving their message. We can only assume that they would know this. But in Scarlett's experience and with what Ryder shared with us in the past many times with different paranormal incidences, they do know. They get in your head somehow. They know a lot. even if they just can't jump right into our world with us. We're going to take a few tools with us. We each have a couple of knives, I have a rope, and then we all have light sticks in case we can't really see in there. This is a spirit world of some kind, but there is a world over there. At least that's what we're expecting. And just because there's spirits or entities, we can expect there will also be physical objects. And anything physical, we can try to use to our advantage. The Hawthorne Five have been in for a while, and they are committed, so we're up against a lot. Before we dive into it all, we eat up some ribs that Frank made us. They were awesome. Helped us fuel up before we continue. We eat fast, and we head back up to the attic. And we're in there just by candlelight now because the sun set. There's no electricity in the attic. We're there in front of these big mirrors. The middle one's really big. And these mirrors should work as one now, and I will be going in, Frankie and Scarlett. We need someone from our side to stay outside of the mirrors in the real world. So if they get any signs of distress from us, they'll have to get the rest of the team together for help and come in after us. And that person on the lookout will be Jagger. Now, it took Bella some wooing before she was taken. And what I mean by that is that she visited the mirror multiple times before she was sucked in. So how is it that we think we can just set ourselves up in front of them and get sucked in? Well, even though that one bigger mirror is more powerful, it's the core of the triad's powers. Without the other two, even it needs to work a little bit harder. But also, Bella had been warned, so there was most likely some resistance. So it just took a little bit to get her. We now have all the mirrors together. There will be no resistance from us. We just need to fight that spell. Since Frankie's the biggest, he takes the biggest mirror with Scarlet and I on each side. And Mason steps out, around the corner, waits at the top of the attic stairs. So he's not in direct line of anything, but he can peek around and check us out if he needs to. We sit down in front of our mirrors, and it was the same for all of us. We all start to see these white, blurry images. We couldn't make out any body shapes or anything, but their faces did start to form. Black eyes, red lips, and very white skin. There were five. But one started to move in, and she smiled at me, and I started to feel an almost numbness take over my body. Maybe like after you've had your first glass of wine for the night or something, but it wasn't relaxing. It was disturbing. It felt more like something was inside of you, filling you with that warmth. I started to hear my thoughts, but then I realized it wasn't my voice. It was a woman's voice, and she was so friendly. I can still hear it now, even as I explain this to you. She was telling me it was time. In my head, I asked her back, well, who are you? What time for what? My head got very light, but for some reason, my brain felt very heavy. I was staring at this woman, and it was almost as if the whole room was just blackness, and it was just me and them. She said this was the answer to all of my questions that I seek every day, that I've done enough, and it was time to come home. I was confused, but then I thought that I wanted to go. It felt somehow comforting. I was starting to give in, but then I had to fight it. This was not real. This was a spell, and this was how this all got Bella. But I keep those thoughts quiet, and instead I try to act natural. You know, holding on to oneself through this was so hard. I was literally thinking so hard about what I was doing that I couldn't move, not a muscle. It was more than just the numb feeling I had. It was like my body froze itself so that it could concentrate. I was able to force out an answer while trying to block my real thoughts, and I told her that sounded nice. But then I asked, what did I have to do? And she said, all I had to do was take her hand. Now, I'm holding on to reality the best I've got. I am frozen. I'm leery of moving anything, moving at all, in case I lose my strength to hold on to the control that I have in my head. But I know I have to. I have to push myself further. I can barely feel myself do it. But I know I am doing it. I slowly reach my hand up and I reach out to her. Now, at this point, the candles in the room are flickering and Mason was peeking around the corner from the stairs. And he explained us later what all happened. We were all sitting there cross-legged, like he left us, but our heads were facing up into the mirrors and our eyes were open very wide and our mouths were slightly open also. And then he saw it. Frankie went first, then I went, then Scarlett went. And it seemed like we were turning into powder or some kind of black smoke, he said, as we got sucked into our mirrors one by one. All I remember is that when I reached up my hand, a force pulled it. I didn't feel another hand take mine. I just felt a force take hold of my hand and then my arm and then my body. Now, when I fall in, I'm not sure where I am or what to expect, but it's all dark. It's all black and grays. I'm glad to see that Frankie's there, and then soon after that, Scarlett drops in. And we all get up and kind of hover a little closer to each other and take a look around, try to get our bearings. We all notice it right away. We're in the same room from where we left. We are in the mirror image. It's just everything is a shade of gray. But we all know it's the mirror image right now of what one might see if you were looking from the other side as the reflection. When looking in a mirror, you can never see beyond what is reflected back to you, right? But we are now in this new world. And once we get beyond that reflection, what it's showing us, we have no idea what we're going to find. All we can do is go forward. So we each take a deep breath and we go for it. What you would see in the end of the reflection for the mirrors against the wall is just the wall on the other side of the room. The mirrors were against the wall to the outside of the house, so we'd be looking from there. And what you'd see in the reflection is the inside wall, where all that stuff was that we moved. And remember that locked door to the secret room. We do see some of the stuff that we moved. It's still in view off to the side. It's a little bit different, though. We don't have a long ways to go here, but we almost get the sense like we're entering a dream as we walk. It's the same, but it's all that gray and black, and it's just different in some way. And then we get to that door. That room held all of the history of this family, of this house. You'd think that maybe we could just run down the stairs even, but those were off to the side. You can't see those stairs in the reflection of the mirror. So they're not even there when we look around that corner. It's just a wall. You can't see the actual stairs in the reflection, so they don't exist here. But the door to that secret room does. We look at each other.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And then we look back at the mirrors. They're there, same as we left them, on the other side of the room. They don't reflect anything, though. It's just where the mirrors would be, it's just black. Well, we turn back around because it's time for us to go at it again. We have to go through that door. It's ajar, just like we left it. And so I reach out my hand to the handle and I slowly pull it open. At first, there's nothing. It's like a space, a void. And it's this heavy gray color. We go through the door and we walk forward. We can't see any end of what we're doing. There are dark gray walls to the sides of us, but it's just black ahead of us. Black, but then as you walk into the blackness with every step, it does start to change a little bit. It changes into that deep gray space. But then we go a little bit further. It starts to open up a bit, but only a bit. I'd say about 10 feet or so. At the end of that, you'd still see only black. We notice the walls are getting filled with these vines. More as we go. They aren't green, they're black. But then the further in we go, they change too. First to a brown and then to this deep red. It's the only color in the place that we've seen so far. We're hoping that means that we're getting somewhere. And soon enough, we find out that we are. We start to hear voices, and they're women's voices, and the voices are like echoing whispers, but we can make out what they're saying. In between some distant laughter that we're hearing, we hear one woman's voice saying that you're doing fine, another welcome to your new home. And then Frankie stops us and tells Scarlett and I to listen to what we don't know yet. He points up and over and nods just slightly and tells us to listen for it. We're still not sure, but then we do hear it. It's a man's voice, and it's a man who's crying. Then, as we're standing there, we get a sense to look up, and when we do that, it's like the ceiling is bubbling down to us, and when it does just enough, we see one of those white faces coming down at us. It's above us, and it's just a bit further out than we are. The face then bursts out of the black ceiling above, and when it comes out, it bursts with this black smoke busting with it. Behind the face is more of this black smoke-like material. I guess it would be its body. I mean, it's got a neck and arms. And this body just gets longer as it comes towards us. Almost looks like it could be partly solid, but it moves like thick smoke. And every time it moves, some of that smoke bursts away from it. Like it's almost dripping from it, and then it dissolves in the air. Anyway, this face swoops down with its black smoke trail, and it swoops down, but it stays connected to the black space above it. It gets closer, and the face itself becomes more clear to us than it did in the mirror. And we all see it. It's the face of Sarah, the first one taken from the house. Only she's a little bit different. She isn't that sweet lady in the picture we saw, that's for sure. She's this bigger version of herself, and she just looks wicked. She moves like a spirit out from the black and comes right towards us and fast. She looks at each of us and she smiles and then she just laughs. This one big burst of laughter. Then she slowly sucks back into where she came from, taking another burst of echoing laughter with her. And we're just standing there stunned. And right as she disappears, the room starts to lighten up again. And, you know, Frankie can't help himself and he says, something like, you know, I have to say that was one heck of a welcome. And Scarlett and I kind of look at him, giving him that scolding look, but it was kind of nice to have the humor right then. And that was a good thing because when the room started to lighten up, we could start to see what was going on. Everything is still gray and black, but those red vines are thicker now. They're thicker and in bunches. The walls are this dirty looking gray and it looks like it's gray wallpaper falling off everywhere. We notice the walls are actually moving. They appear to be breathing because they're slowly bulging and then retreating. It's very weird to have that on either side of you. There are black leaves on the ground, and they move around as if there's a breeze almost, but we don't feel any breeze. And at first, we don't really get what the heck the nature theme is. But then when I see the white worn pillars, it hits me. And I blurt out that it's the garden. This mirror has traveled from the house to the garden on its journey at this home. And so it's incorporated both the inside and the outside to its world here. The vines, the leaves, the stone on the ground, the pillars, the fireplace against the wall. There's a large black table off to the side. It's all of it. There are some things we don't recognize, but there are parts of the garden here and parts of the house these mirrors have seen. It's all mixed together, a reflection on the inside, in this place, of what the mirror has seen, even the vines. But why are they red? That we don't know. We go up to inspect them more closely, and they're rough, and they're very strong. And Frankie tries to pull a few away from each other in this bunch that are hanging down by each other, but he can't. And then it seems like he's almost going to get it, but then he lets go. He backs away and we go in closer to find out what's up. And he tells Scarlett and I that they moved. He said the vines moved. Well, we want him to do it again so that we can see what he's talking about. But then we hear something and we all turn around. There are these larger vines creeping into the room from one side of the fireplace. They aren't moving too fast, but they're moving fast enough. And what are they doing? They're feeling their way around through the room, on the walls, on the floor, and closer to us, by the way. That part's obvious. We aren't that far from the fireplace either, so those vines aren't really that far from where we are. So we back away from those strings of vines that Frankie was working on, and we slowly move our way to the other side of the room, and then try to make our way slowly around the other side of the fireplace, away from those big, creepy, crawly vines. We get around the fireplace, And we notice right away more familiar items from the house. And as we make our way around a pillar and through the more black leaves, we realize there are duplicate items from the other side of the fireplace. It turns out the second room, or room on the other side of this fireplace, is just the opposite of that first room, with a few things added. I decide to move one of the dining room chairs around so it's facing the other way. Remember, you know, it's a physical item, and we're hoping those items can be used to help us, at least during our short time we hope to be in this place. If the whole place is like this, we're going to need something that makes it easier for us to notice our way out of here. Notice a chair better than trying to remember all the smaller things that are scattered around everywhere. We also notice more vines, and Frankie goes and grabs a couple of them like before. They're in a bunch, just like the last one, and he's about to start pulling on them when this black hand reaches out and swipes his fingers. Well, Frankie pulls away. It's that black, smoky stuff again. And we watch as it fringes off and floats off and dissolves in the air. And then this white face with black eyes almost floats out from the wall behind the vines and says in a whispered voice, a long no. Then he backs it up against the wall again, and we all look at each other, and we lean in for a closer look. We never would have noticed this guy back there. And Scarlett asks him, "Hey, no to what?" And she gets an answer. The face comes back, and we have a chance to look at it a little more closely this time. It's hard to tell with how white and black all these things are, but it looks like a young man. A young man from who knows when. When he answers in that soft voice again, he says the house is awake now, that by touching its lifeline, we've awoken the house. He says that they brought you here so the house can feed, and now it knows you're here. It's coming for you. And that's all he says before he backs away back into the wall behind the vines. We try to get him back, but as Frankie tries wiggling the red vines again, all we get are those big vines coming back. And we realize that is how they'll get us. The vines are the blood of that house. That's why they are red. And those big vines are coming for us. We know that once they have us, they will surely cage us like the rest of these guys. And like the young man said, feed. And that mirror has been in the garden for a long time, so this place must be hungry. And that's how Bella must be right now, in a vine cage. This place would be holding her until she changes over. They're sucking the life out of her. That's the 4 days. Then once this place gets enough, it will suck her up into the walls like the others. And then she'll be stuck here forever. The large vines are still coming at us. And there are more of them this time. And it looks like they're crawling faster. So we start off again. And we continue on into this place. And it doesn't just go straight back.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18
plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. There are lefts and rights you can take. So room after room, we have to leave ourselves a trail to follow to get out because they're all just opposites of the one before it. But in one of the rooms, Frankie notices something different in the breathing walls. There is one that is black. It's not the dark gray. It's really black. So we stand in front of that wall and we notice something. Around the edges, there are those black, smoky fringes seeping out of the seams. So this has to be something. Frankie reaches out to the wall, and slowly he's able to push his hand through to somewhere. Then he pulls it back out. And with him comes more of that black, smoky, fringy stuff. But we can get through this thing, and there's no time like the present. We all stand in a line, and we just walk forward. It was thick and it was chilled, but we did come out the other side, and that next room was not a duplicate. So this is good news, but the bad news is now where are we? We have about 30 seconds to take in this dark, almost damp feeling room that appears to have nothing in it, at least at first. when we hear more of that laughter. It's Sarah. We start to hear the others as well, and they're chatting about who we are and how we just got there. One of them welcomes us home again. It's almost like they're acting like some kind of hosts. It was completely bizarre. Sarah, though, she stood out. We looked up and we did see her face push through the blackness. But this time, we just tried walking forward. We creep forward and we see, you know, others start to come out of the walls, black, smoky figures with white faces. You know, one of them, two, three. But we don't respond. We just try to keep moving. And then we see her. It's Bella. And she's just as we thought. She's in a vine cage. It's not as close to the walls as the others, but that's because she's still a person. She's not a part of this place yet. We walk up to her, and she appears to be only half conscious. And that's because they're draining her. We look around, and the best we can figure is that this too will become one of those duplicate rooms. But they need her powers, her part to fully create it, to grow. But why aren't they coming after us? We've made it this far. Then this larger-than-life feeling of the supernatural seemed to be all around us as we three at one time, came to a new level of understanding about this place. There was more to it than we first thought, than the family thought. Yes, there are the Hawthorne Five, and they are the ones pulling people in, but who pulled in Sarah? There is more to this than the five of them. These mirrors were not built here. They were given to them. Where were they before they were placed on the walls of the Hawthorne home? We may never know, but they were somewhere, and there is a larger force at work. The Hawthorne Five are evil nuisances, and they're recruiters, basically. But this place started before this plantation. That's the parts of this place that we don't quite recognize. It all makes even more sense now. We need to get Bella out. We need to get past the large vines before they take her again and get us. We feel the vines that are around her, and they're strong like the others, only this time, Scarlet and I feel it too, they are moving slightly. They're alive, and these vines, they feel more fresh and young, and they're holding in their fresh and young prey. Frankie gives one quick attempt to pull them apart, and they're a little bit more flexible than the other ones, but they still won't budge. The three of us look at each other and then down to our knives. It's the only way. We're going to have to cut into these things, slice them so we can move them to the side. Sounds like no big deal, but if pulling on them is a magnet for the big red guys, who knows what slicing into it will do. But we have to do it. Our lady friends are coming in a bit more closer now. This time they aren't talking or laughing either. They're more like hissing. But we each take a knife and we start to get to work. These vines are softer, but they're tough, like I said. And as we cut, red drips down onto our hands and arms. It's a red liquid, like blood. Bella starts to wake up and she starts to scream at first. But then she realizes what's going on. She starts pulling and tugging on the two vines we're trying to cut through. And it does start to flex. There's red dripping everywhere. You'd think we were in some sick horror movie, if you could see us, but we keep going, and then finally, Frankie grabs them both and pulls them apart. He has to hold them there until Bella can crawl out. And these things are strong. They're fighting him. She's still a little out of it, so Scarlet and I help her. When she gets out, Frankie lets go, and the vines go back. The five, they're all over us now. They're putting their smoky bodies right up against us, but we sort of put our heads down and try to plow through them, back to the black breathing wall. Frankie picks up Bella and we all just walk right through it. We get to the other side and he sets her down and we do a check of how she's doing. She takes a small second and tries to get her bearings, but then she does say that she can make it. Then we all see the big red vines coming at us, and they're coming at us fast now. So we just tell her, well, that's good, because it's time to go, and it's time to go home right now. We have to run, and we have to dodge this giant vine through the rooms, trying to remember our own clues and in what order while it approaches us with many crawling legs and on the walls and on the floor. In one of the rooms, one of the small vine tentacles on this thing hooks onto Bella's ankle, and it pulls her down. Well, I rush over, and I immediately break out another knife. Not that really by looking at the size of this thing as a whole, I'm even sure it'll work, but it's all I've got. To my surprise, this large vine is even softer than the fresh cage she was in. It's got an almost sheen to it, and it's most definitely alive. This vine is a creature. It's a creature of this place. As I start my cut into the small red string that's wrapped around Bella's leg, we hear this deep and gnarly sound coming from the place. It's echoing through it. I keep cutting, and then the place starts to tremble, just a little, like a very small earthquake. I get through it, but now I've made it mad. And oh yes, it's mad. The vine starts banging through things and cracking the walls. I mean, if this thing could run, it'd be sprinting right for us. The tentacles are everywhere, just hitting everything. And this part was not fun by any means, but we somehow do make it back to the reflection room with the mirrors. We hear the sounds of the destruction of the big vine coming towards us, but we have to try to get through those black spaces in the mirrors. There are four of us now. This time, I will take Bella through the large mirror, and Frankie and Scarlett will take each of the other two. The large vine breaks into the room through the secret room door in the back. We all put our hands into the mirror blackness, and they tingle, but they do go. So we think we have a chance. We look back one more time, and all I remember is this giant red tentacle almost ready to grab my torso. I turn fast, and Bella and I jump. And now you have to imagine, there in the attic of the home is Mason and Frank. They fell asleep in the attic. The candles are out. It's morning now. And think of how startling it would be for them to have what looked like bloody figures crashing out of the mirrors and onto the floor. And that's how you're woken up. They're startled, to say the least. They back away at first, but we tell them it's okay. We tell them that we're not hurt. Not really. Mason sees Bella and she sees him, and they rush towards each other. Frank isn't quite sure what to do, but he does look at us and he gives us a nod of approval. This man has been around this place for a long time. He grew up there. He knows a lot about the family history, and now we have some things that we can tell him that could help fill in some of the blanks. We leave the attic, clean up a bit, and we fill them in on what's going on, and we let them know that we did see the Hawthorne Five, or what's left of them. They are the hunters and gatherers. They are the collectors of this place, you know, that's inside these mirrors. But there's also something bigger, a force that has followed these mirrors from wherever they came. Whoever that man was that gave them to Rose as a gift was not a good man. He would be the one with the full answers to who and what has been inside of these mirrors from the beginning, what started all of this. One theory is that it's simply the power of one's own reflection. Look at a mirror long enough and somehow it becomes aware of you. But like I said, there are many theories to the mirror. What we found out in this case is that there's something real inside these mirrors. While they still exist, the curse of the Hawthorne Five will live on, as will the force that ultimately is behind that place inside of those mirrors. But I can understand why the family didn't want to destroy them. I have no idea what force would be unleashed if that did happen. Mason left his job renovating that place. He locked the attic with a blunt warning on the outside of it. He left a blunt warning with the family as well. Unless I got called back there, we would not be going back to that plantation, and I know that neither Mason or Bella ever plan on going back. But Frank is still there, and so are the mirrors. And that was the story of what happened when we had to get up and leave right after Alaska. And before I put this release together, me and the team did do a look back on everything that happened, just like we try to do for every job. The power of the reflection left us with this feeling. No, we're not afraid of mirrors, but in some sort of way, it does make you think. There are those that do love to see themselves in mirrors, a little more than others, right? I think I won't be able to help it that if I see someone loving a mirror a little too much, in the back of my mind, I just might wonder if there's actually someone or something looking back at them. And maybe that person's love of the mirror is really them getting mesmerized by what's inside, like Sarah or Rose. Things of old still happen today, folks. Just saying. Thank you for listening today to this special Tuesday edition. I hope you enjoyed it. Like, subscribe, and turn on your notifications if that's your thing. But here's your heads up that the next full story release is set for Friday. Until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.